This is The Liminalist, the podcast between Jason Halsey at horticulture.com. What you're about to hear is an edited version of the most recent Liminalist live video meetup with Francis Hutchins, Martin J, and Christopher S. Lights flash by in the fast world echoes your three out of four of us today were at Dave O'Shaughnessy's meet yesterday. So you're outnumbered, Francis. So I think we'll probably start there because I'm curious to hear people's experience. I mean, Martin did share very little bit yesterday, more than most did. Just do you want to share a little bit of what it was like?
Me first, or
sure, yeah.
Was extremely impressed by it, actually. Very impressed by him, and I think I understand a bit better what you were trying to do in your first meetup. Actually, what you were trying to, you were essentially, I think, trying to pass on that thing that he's doing. I don't know what it is. It's incredibly impressive, really. And immediately afterwards, I felt very different. And in a sense, I felt like some in a sense, my soul had an opportunity to exist. That he had allowed it to exist, and all of the effort of denying it, I had an opportunity probably for the first time in my life not to do that, and so I felt very profoundly different. I had quite different dreams. What did I dream about? I dreamt about a stadium, and I forget what was happening. Something unusual was happening that I hadn't seen before, and I'm very impressed. Very impressed by it. Yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised. Although I perhaps shouldn't be, but. It took me longer to have that kind of experience with Dave. I was quite unimpressed when I first met him, but I was quite impressed by that in a sense, because he obviously didn't put on an act or anything like that. So I was intrigued.
When I was hearing the music, I thought, oh, this is funny. And I thought, oh, this is just a bit sort of cheesy. And seeing his mouse cursor move on the screen, and I thought, well, this is just, it's sort of amateurish. But then gradually, as I started to listen to the music, I started to see that actually it was communicating something, which a kind of sense of nature, which I could only experience in nature, a sort of feeling that I only experienced in nature. And so I thought, actually, even though it's quite simple, there's actually something quite profound in it. And that sort of carried on into him, that it wasn't overly sophisticated what he was constructing or giving off, but it was incredibly impressive. Incredibly impressive.
So it started right away for you then. It wasn't a slow burn thing. Like you moved into a different space very early on.
I mean, I'd watched some of his YouTube videos, and so I knew just from watching those that he wasn't bullshitting, that he actually did have something to share, something impressive. So I was already in a state of mind to that I wasn't sceptical, but I mean I was reserving judgment in a sense, in that it's the first time I've ever participated in something like that, a sort of quasi a religious or something kind of group with a leader, you know. It's always something I've been completely uninterested and sort of scornful of. But his demeanour is, he's so pragmatic, and it's obviously entirely from experience, and that he's not offering, and that's why I said afterwards why I appreciated that he talked about a lot of the negative aspects of the process, is that he's not offering a panacea or something free. It's practical, but in an extraordinarily expanded understanding of the word.
All right, well, that was very ample. Can't help thinking of Dave getting to hear this, because he always appreciates feedback, and maybe he will. I was also curious about the extent to which I was successful or not in trying to reproduce that, but before I get to that, let's hear what Chris's experience was.
So yeah, so I had emailed Dave about the 11/11 thing a couple weeks ago, and he emailed me back. I'd forgotten that he was in Maine, and he sent me an email saying, you know, would I like to meet him, you know, and I did. I ended up meeting him a little over a week ago when he was here. It had just been a big storm and the power was out, so I met him in this kind of rural, really rural area. I didn't have any expectations. Like, I hadn't really looked at much of what his website had. I'd read a few articles, but you know, so he seemed really down to earth, but he did have, I was a little skeptical and about the whole thing, but there's something about his presence. He has an aura. So some weird effects kind of happened when I was talking to him. And I hadn't heard about that. I hadn't read any of the testimonials or anything. So, I mean, all that seems legit. I'm still questioning the whole thing, you know, because I can't. And my default setting is kind of to be skeptical and figure out where the hoodwinking or whatever is going on. But I'm not sure that's the case. I don't really think that is the case. And talking to him, or seeing him yesterday, he was a lot more. He was a lot funnier. I don't know. There's something going on there. I guess I'm trying to grasp what it means and what my response would be to it. He did say something about consciousness I thought was interesting. It kind of stuck with me from yesterday, is that we wake up like reverse vampires. We wake up into this consciousness that's like a coffin. And I thought that was an interesting concept. I do feel that way a lot of the time, you know, that I wake up to this sense of myself that I'm really, feels claustrophobic and isn't the way, you know, I think I should feel. And he somehow embodies that, I guess, the embodies a sense of self that is very attractive, you know, and I would like to emulate or somehow replicate for myself. So,
do you want to say any more about the curious impressions that you had or experiences?
I mean, he kind of flickers. He flickered. is, you know, when I was looking at him, he was flickering at times. My mind was unclouding and kind of clouding up at the same time. I don't know if I'm describing it well, but I guess that's what he was talking about, is no mind. I felt like things were kind of, my mind was kind of clearing up and around the edges, like an unfogged mirror. And sometimes when I looked at him, he would start to flicker like kind of a ghostly kind of way, like a hologram or something. It was strange. He mentioned like the psychedelic, you know, people go to see him for a psychedelic experience. I had no idea that that was something that might happen. And I kind of resisted that. It freaked me out a little bit, really. I mean, when I started to feel that way, when my mind started to feel a little different, I kind of had to, you know, reorient myself a little bit, it was a little overwhelming.
Well, yeah, a lot of people do testify to those experiences. I don't. I mean, I'm not sure if I've ever had anything of that kind with Dave. Obviously, I've had all kinds of life-changing experiences, but I don't think any of them would count as psychedelic. And I wonder about that, why that is. But anyway, I'm going to turn over to Frances now, even though she wasn't there, just to include you, Frances. Did you knew about the Dave thing? I mean, because I emailed you. I'm pretty sure I included you in the email. You didn't know about it?
I've been really busy, so I missed it. So it kind of was something that went above my radar. So I'm quite curious if you could fill me in and remind me who he is and what the structure of the day was yesterday, because it sounds very intriguing.
Well, it was the same structure as he has been doing for his weekly online video meets that was inspired these meetings, the structure. But this was a free event, which he occasionally does. And hence I posted about it at my blog a week or two ago, and I'm pretty sure I included you in the email to this group, such as it is. But anyway, and there were 30 people there yesterday, which is about twice the normal number. It's always different people, which is kind of interesting. And there was about half of them that I knew from regular meetings, and then about half that I didn't. And then there was Martin, Chris, and this guy Michael, who also came via me and my site. So I knew those guys. And it was a two-hour meeting, and I fell asleep about halfway through or something. I think I probably slept about half an hour, which is fairly common. It happens quite a lot. I fall asleep in Dave's meetings, and I mean not a lot, maybe one in five or something like that, but I generally find that when I fall asleep I have the best experience, or vice versa. I don't know, like it's a good sign if I fall asleep, because it's usually not normal sleep. Like I've had experiences, it wasn't like this yesterday, or at least I wasn't aware of it, but I have had experiences where I fall asleep and I can still hear Dave talking. So it's like I'm actually hearing him talking while I'm asleep, and in this, not like listening to hypnotic tapes, so I suppose it could be like that, but it's more like I'm actually hearing a different version of the class. Like it's not exactly the same, but it's like it carries on in the dream state. And I would say that, I mean, I'm somebody who's very difficult for me to let go of my mental processes and my mind-based identity, and I mean it's difficult for everyone, but compared to other people who hang around Dave, a lot of them do tend to be less mentally oriented, and they go into these no mind states and no trouble. I don't. I've never had a no mind experience with Dave except when I fall asleep. So I think that's for me, that's the way that I do that. Anyway, as to what the meeting was about, I mean, the funny thing about Dave meetings is that they're all kind of the same. And because he's always talking about the same thing, which is how to experience the life of the soul, how to move one's awareness outside the mind and into the body and through the body into the soul, and to experience our totality. So it's like, it's almost like every class is a remake of the last, and yet it's always different, of course, cause, and he's always joking and digressions and stuff. But in terms of actual content, mostly I don't really remember what the content was, unless I really have to think about it, because it's and he does that consciously, I think. He said that he doesn't want people to go away from his meetings with ideas and, mental, whatever, theories and whatnot, things to think about. He wants them to have more of an experience. And this is something that I've, I guess, as Martin pointed out, I've attempted to emulate in various different ways, but specifically with these meetings. And it's today, actually, I was thinking, and maybe it's because now we have people who've been to Dave, I was thinking, well, I got to stop trying to do what Dave does, because I can't do what Dave does. I'm not Dave, but I'm not in that state anyway. So it may be better if I just kind of admit my limitations and focus on specific subjects and areas that I'm investigating, and just make it more theme based. And anyway, I was having that thought. Not necessarily that I was going to act on it, but so now I'm definitely curious about what Martin or any of you say. Well, Francis, you can't comment because you haven't seen Dave, but what you think about that, Martin said it was the first meeting it was more apparent, which I think is probably true. What you think in terms of how you compare these meetings to Dave meetings, and how you would want them to be different or the same, or just any thoughts you have about that?
Well, Dave has something indescribable, I think, and I've only been to one meeting, so I can't really talk too much about it. I mean, as you said, his method is, and he said that at the start, he said, I can talk about anything. The point is not really what I'm talking about. The point is the transmission, the enlightenment transmission, as he calls it, which is not really communicated in what he's saying. That in a sense the language is just a lot of noises, rhythmic noises that are like echoing off the chamber that he has created in himself, or that exists in himself, and resonating. So he's not constructing arguments for you or presenting evidence or any of those things. I mean, though he sort of hints that he could do that. With sort of more advanced topics and so on. I don't know if that's just wordplay or if there really is such a development in the process. But what I took from him was in a sense the same, a bit like the experience of watching a wild animal or watching a tree blowing in the wind or something like that, where the thing is just totally uninhibited. And your own personal spirit is then brought out by the life of that other being. So that's something that's defined by him. And so unless you felt that you had attained the same state, which clearly you said you haven't, then obviously you can't pursue the same method. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it's that's something I sensed in the first meeting, that it felt artificial because it wasn't really your work that was coming out, because you're a writer and you're an investigator, and so those things in a sense felt inhibited, and it's difficult to say. I mean, it's just a personal question for you, Jason, really, but what you feel you want to offer. Clearly what attracts people to you is your writing and the investigation that you do and your integrity around that. I was very pleased to see you had Anne Diamond on actually again on the podcast, so I haven't listened to that yet, but I will do. Because she obviously is someone who's very brave and is really pursuing the topic thoroughly in an honest and deep way. And I think isn't that more what you have to bring to this? I think. I'm not sure. I mean, it's really up to you, Jason, what you think's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, one obvious difference is what with these meetings and Dave meeting is that these are much more interactive, and I'm definitely not comfortable with just holding the space. I mean, not just holding space is what I do. I'm not comfortable with filling the space completely the way that I was trying to do more at the beginning and the way that Dave does. It's one of the reasons I fall asleep at Dave meetings, is I don't like just listening to somebody talk non-stop. And I think you do have to have these subtler, deeper, less conscious experiences or less mental experiences with the Dave thing in order to get the benefit from them. Whereas what I do, it's possible to just stay at a mental level and benefit from the ideas and the models and whatnot, right? I was going to say something else, it's completely gone out of my mind now. Oh, I know, it was, yeah, I appreciated seeing, hearing what you said about the wild animal. Dave probably would too, but because that's something that I tried to express when I was talking about Dave on one of these meetings. I remember when Frances said that she thought I was idolizing him. It's something I return to with Dave. The thing that I most appreciate about him is just what you said, that to have the experience of being with a human being who does seem to be uninhibited in the way that nature is uninhibited. So it's like seeing human nature as it's supposed to be. That I would say is the thing that I benefited mostly from Dave, or the most. And certainly I aspire to that, because of course I aspire, I mean that's the point, right? Aspiring to be one's nature, and that I do find that, you know, being in a dialogue with others is one of the ways that I can be most uninhibited. So it isn't really an either or, it's like for me holding this space is, and I noticed this listening back, particularly the last one where it was all guys, whether that is relevant to this, I don't know, that when I was listening back to podcast, it was very gratifying to hear, because I had the sense that the space that we'd created was allowing for the people there, the guys there, to find their voices in new ways, which is both figurative and literal, but in terms of discovering ways to become less inhibited in life, you know, in expression. So that's what the space is for me, and that's what the space is for everyone, and that isn't really about ideas or research or any of that stuff. It's just that So that's the common interest, that's our shared interest. And I think that, I mean, bringing it back to Chris, who was saying that you're still skeptical about Dave, and I am too, is the thing, because I'm inherently, I'm not skeptical about who or what he is, I'm skeptical about what he's doing, as in being the spiritual teacher. I don't think I can ever not be skeptical about that. Because I think the model in itself is inherently flawed. I think Dave would probably agree, but he's still doing it, and I think I understand why, because if he doesn't do that, I mean, if he was just a plumber, then he's not going to be able to reach the people that are going to benefit, right? So, and he's not a writer, and he's not, you know, I could see him being a stand-up comedian, like, my ideal future for Dave would be that he would move from being a spiritual teacher to doing stand-up, and then he would just reach people that way. Well, it's just a fantasy, of course, but I mean, I like the idea of a more covert strategy.
He believes it's important to the future of the world, though. I mean, he takes it very seriously, I think. It's not just a... Though he's funny and comic, he's very, very serious about it too, though, isn't he? I mean, and as you say, he's not interested in being a teacher, and that comes across because he doesn't really know how to teach, and it's not an insight which is teachable in that way. It's just communicable, physically communicable. And I think he's probably right that it is that serious. I really do. I think it is very important insight he has.
Yes, I agree with that. I mean, the last part, as far as it being important, I mean, if anything is, I just think, I mean, I don't necessarily want this to be a sidetrack. I mean, this could be a sidetrack, or it could be a really rich vein to tap. I don't know, but. Well, now I'm not sure I can even finish the thought. I mean, I guess it's something we can only really speculate about. Like, for me, it's very important for me to get to the truth of my own trauma, as you all know, and, you know, to become whole and to clear out toxins in the body and so on. This seems to be a daily process that has, you know, it's all inclusive, like everything I do and say affects that, but there's a primary method, a central method to that is exploring and investigating as a writer and as a speaker what's going on in the world, like the hidden structures of control and exploitation and all that, because it's like a mirror. I use it as a mirror to help me focus my attention on my internal, you know, dysfunction. So that's very important to me. But if I extend that to it's very important to the fate of the world, I get a big flashing red light saying, no, don't go there. That's megalomania. That's delusional. That's not relevant. And I don't believe it. I don't believe that what I do is going to change the world, because I don't think the world ever changes. I don't think it's supposed to change. You know, I've been round and round this. Like, I cannot conceive of a world that would be better than this one. Not really. Because it's like, you get rid of the mosquitoes, and then you break the food chain. There's birds that live on mosquitoes, and then they die, and then the whole thing collapses. So, like I said, I don't know if this is a sidetrack, because, you know, we don't know about Dave, but, I mean, all I know with Dave is has been of practical value to me, knowing him, and I think that's great that he can reach others and bring practical assistance, you know, in their life, in their lives. But extending that to some sort of world-saving mission seems to me, and Dave and I have been around this many times because he's been talking for years about reaching more people, but he hasn't done anything about it. And I've always been saying, no, it shouldn't be more, it should be less. And he kind of agrees, like he likes it when it's a smaller group on the retreats, and he says his fantasies will just be one person one day. So, you know, it's very contradictory that. And I'm, you know, it's very relevant to me because I'm working hard every day, particularly lately, to reach more people, to streamline my work and, you know, categorize my books correctly at Amazon and get it all, you know, finally really pay some attention to the details there and be more pragmatic as a businessman, if you like, or whatever. But I don't really want to, like, you haven't listened to the latest podcast with Anne Diamond, but it occurred to me I'd done this thing of self-sabotaging again unconsciously, because at one point, well, she and I really sort of challenge her, because I think that she's quite self-sabotaging in the way that she presents her information. And as part of my challenge to her, I say, you know, why do you want to reach people who already believe that the Illuminati controls the world, you know? What difference is it going to make to them? Because they're, you know, they're just undiscerning anyway. They've just got this whole blanket view of everything's, you know, satanic Illuminati. So what difference does it make if Leonard Cohen's another? Anyway, just specifically, that's the specifics. But the generality is that I was expressing what I feel, which is that I don't want to really reach an undiscerning audience. I don't see the point. But how do you find the discerning ones if you don't reach a whole bunch of undiscerning? How do you, you've got to reach more people just to find the people that you really can reach, I think.
Thank you.
anyway, has anyone like anything to say? I mean, Francis, do you have anything that's been, because you haven't been here for a couple of weeks or a couple of sessions, seems. Was it just one? No, it's just one you missed. It feels like more. Yeah. Did you listen to the podcast of the event that you didn't attend?
No, it sounds like you're asking if I did my homework. No, I've been so busy. I feel like it's been longer, but I think that's because it's winter's here, and I think last time it was autumn. So I feel like we've had a change of season. Mm. It's kind of interesting. It was just disguise. I was hoping Marie was going to be in on the session today, but maybe next time.
Mari hasn't been for 3 weeks. This is the third time she hasn't been here.
Third time? Three strikes and you're out?
Yeah.
But I was thinking about that idea that you were just talking about reaching people, and something that's been coming up for me as well, because my partner's been teaching classes, and one of the things that he's been struggling with is that notion that how can you teach 30 people in an hour? How much more would you learn if it was one-to-one in an hour? Like, realistically, the best way to learn is one-to-one or a small group. And I really feel that that's your strength. And that's what I really like about our group, is that it's small. And I feel like a lot of work can be done within that. And, something that Chris was mentioning, I think for me your strength, Jason, is the art of conversation. Like I always say about you, that I really hope that I can take some of that ability to just meander and to verbalize your thoughts. And for me, I think I haven't experienced Dave. I don't know how I personally get on with it, but I find this format, as a person that thinks quite a lot, very useful. So, I do struggle with that kind of heart-based five rhythms crowd. But I don't know, it's just different, isn't it? It's not, maybe it's not comparable.
The heart-based five rhythms crowd?
Yeah, you know, the kind of people that go and do the dances for 5 hours and dance to different colours and emotions, and they can just let themselves go. I guess, you know, what you're saying, some people can just let themselves go and be in the moment and be embodied, but for whatever reason, you know, again, maybe it's a trauma thing that makes you more reticent or reluctant or unable to fully be present, or maybe it's just more prosaic. But I think for me that's a little bit too much. So I appreciate this format. It's got a good balance between that spontaneity, that idea of improvisation, but with a structure to it. So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah. Well, not to keep comparing to Dave, because I don't think it's productive, but it's one of the things I got from the Dave meetings, was that even though I prefer listening to Dave talk than the other people in the group, I prefer it when it's interactive. Because there's that feeling of never knowing when one's going to contribute and participate, and if there isn't that feeling, then I tend to fall asleep, figuratively and then literally. Like, if I don't have the sense that I'm going to be called upon to participate at any moment, or not necessarily called upon, but have the opportunity to, then I'm in a passive mode. And for myself as a host, or whatever we call this, it's easier. It would be easier for me in a certain sense, although, as Martin was saying about that first meeting, it's not necessarily as authentic, in which case that makes it harder in different ways, but it's easier in a certain sense for me to just talk and talk and talk and talk, you know, as opposed to having to check in with people. And I mean, that's much it's a much more responsive kind of thing, much more It requires being aware of the other. It's pretty obvious, right? And you talk about conversation. Well, when it's two and it's a dialogue, it's relatively simple as compared to when there's now four of us, and I don't quite know who I'm talking to. You know? It's funny because as a kid, growing into a teenager, I always said, I just like one-to-ones. I only want one-to-ones. I didn't like hanging out with two friends, much less three or four. It was always just me and one friend. I had maybe three good friends, but generally I would just see them one at a time. And that actually seemed unusual then, enough that I had to say it. I was aware of it. And I guess it is unusual, like people go out in groups, but I don't understand it. I mean, I've been doing it lately because we have meetings in this town and we're doing this sort of group project. It's not social. They're meetings, right? So I can more or less handle that. I just take notes and just say, make a comment every now and then. But if it was a social event, I wouldn't show up. Pretty much guarantee it. Well, I don't. People do invite me to social events and I just don't go. So I think that what we're doing here as a group is, for me, it has value in terms of discovering something that for many people is, you could say it's second nature, but I'd say it's socially conditioned, that they know the social etiquette of group meetings, which is, well, Chris talked about that on the first meeting he attended. You find out what the party line is and then you just reinforce it. Essentially, you just find out ways to agree and support each other in your whatever I would say there. I would say delusions, but that's me. Your preferences and your values and whatnot. Obviously, these group things aren't for that, and that's... But that can happen. I mean, that's the thing that I feel that I want to be very aware of in terms of checking that tendency that people have in a group to reinforce each other's values as opposed to questioning, and examining and dissolving.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
How do you, I know this is a question, but how do you go about that if you struggle to do that? Like, where do you begin?
Can you rephrase the question in different?
Well, I understand that idea of you don't want the group to become an echo chamber. But at the same time, for me, I find it hard to constructively criticize people and maybe call them out on their bullshit in a nice way. But I appreciate people doing it to me. So maybe that's is a good place for me to be in this group, to learn to do that. Because I think your point is an important one, that it shouldn't just be a social.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that question you're asking is the question I'm asking too. As I'm saying, that's what I think is one of the values of having these meetings and having them be interactive, as opposed to me talking a lot and then checking in with people, moving more and more towards an interactive thing. But there still needs to be, to some degree, somebody directing it. It seems as though, I mean, I guess at a certain point a group could become so organic and interactive that you wouldn't need somebody directing it. But I don't think it's about criticizing and challenging. I mean, it is if you're in the situation that it's already set, like Chris described with Blade Runner, the, you know, the rules of engagement are already laid down and you enter into it, then, which is the case generally, if you just go into, that's why I don't accept social invitations. Not like I'm fending them off or anything, but once in a while there is one and I'm just like, because I know, like, it's just so, such a strong current to swim against, just with a group of three or four people and you're in it, but the rules are already written in stone invisibly, essentially. Well, what are they? I mean, we could examine that, really. What are the rules of social engagement? I mean, we know that you don't rock the boat and you don't do, but specifically, it seems to me they're really like, pretend to have a good time, pretend to feel, to be talking about things that mean things to you. Well, I guess I'm just reducing it now to pretending, but my experience is always, and this is, I mean, it's partly my own problem, my own neurosis, I know that, but it's generally the feeling of, well, somebody needs to shake up this group and bring people's attention to certain facts that are being overlooked here. Hey, you're all going to die. What are we doing sitting around talking about shit, you know? None of this is real. You're always imagining, you know, that you are who, yeah, you know, all this kind of stuff. I used to do this actively. I used to think that that was my role in life, was to constantly be poking and shaking and challenging, and it wasn't much fun actually being that guy. I had to get in a very sort of ego inflated place to be able to do it and take lots of drugs and whatnot. So what I'm learning in middle age, I hope, is how to proceed more subtly, less directly in that regard, and yeah, well, what Martin said about the Dave meetings was very succinct, was that he had an experience of the life of his soul, and paraphrasing there, just being there. Now we could analyze like how that happened. You could say Dave's got super potent transmission power. You could say, slightly more skeptically, there was a bunch of people there who believe in Dave and his super soul transmission power, and so that created a morphogenetic feel, and so on, right? You could break it down.
Got nothing to do with belief, I don't think. Nothing. It's manifest in him. You're watching something. Like I said, seeing a wild animal or a tree in the wind, it's the same. You're just looking at something.
Mm. Well, yes, you could say it's nothing to do with belief, but the way that Dave was behaving, may have been contingent on having a bunch of people giving their attention to him who believe that he is that thing. And that's the very thing that I'm aware of in these groups from the start, and everything I do that I want to be aware of. I was going to say avoid, but I think it's not entirely bad. But I know that the more I'm in the company of people who think that I'm something, the more I can be that thing.
I disagree, Jason. I think because I've noticed you get caught in trying to play a role if you think people are expecting it, and you always end up running out of steam because it's not you, and you get, I think it sort of bores you actually after a while. But I've seen it happen a couple of times, but I think that's true of anybody. If they're trying to play a role for somebody, ultimately they run out of steam. And I didn't have any impression of that with Dave at all yesterday. He was spontaneous, contradictory, confused. Yeah, it wasn't about a question of belief, it was just him.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I mean, having met him the other week, he was different when I met him, and he's putting on an act. We're all putting on an act to some extent. I mean, he's really disinhibited, and I think charismatic, so that comes across differently. But it's like he said that don't listen to what I'm saying, and there's something else is being transmitted by his presence. If I thought I was enlightened and I was it's a really hard road to walk. It must be crazy making. But he must be, we're all performing ourselves to some extent. He was performing himself yesterday, maybe better than he was when I met him one-on-one or differently. I don't know. But, you can't get out of that. You can only maybe be more authentic, and maybe he's more authentic because he's more disinhibited than anyone else. But I get the feeling that he even said, this is my act, this is my act. And I think his consciousness is just somewhere else.
I think there's a middle thing here. It's not a question of an either or thing. Like Martin's saying, it's not about belief. But that doesn't mean, even if that's true, it doesn't mean that the way Dave or anyone isn't shaped by our audience or those who are receiving and perceiving us. And I think that is unavoidable. To fall back on the point that I've made many, many times, that the self only comes into being, or the identity only comes into form through interaction with an other, and to some extent as a reflection of an other and a response to an other, then of course Dave or whoever is going to be different depending on who he's talking to. And if we're talking about having an audience of people who believe that you're enlightened, that is quite an extreme arrangement or configuration of an other. So,
but his enlightenment is self-defined. It's not. He's not appealing to anyone's concept of it. He's telling you this is what enlightenment is, and it's none of those things you've been told by all these other spiritual teachers. It's got nothing to do with that. It's inside you, in your body, and so. My feeling was that all of the people at the meeting, at least those, I should rephrase it, the people who had prior experience of him had come to understand that all he was offering was himself. And that they were there because they wanted that. So he wasn't putting himself in a position where he was trying to give them. And that's why it didn't matter what he said, really, that there wasn't really much structure to it, because he wasn't giving them guidance beyond his own existence. And that issue of performance is funny, because as I was watching him, I thought, the feeling I'm getting, it reminds me of British films from the 60s. Sort of Cockney actors or something like that. There was a feeling of Michael Caine or something like that. There was something which reminded me of that kind of charisma, 1960s charisma, where he is an actor. He is acting, but it's not an act. He's not faking something for you. He's performing it as himself.
Yeah, well, I think it's very energizing. I mean, David's, my experience is different levels of energy. I've been with Dave, I've talked to him informally over Skype for hours. He was just in, you know, relaxed mode and just chit-chatting about movies and this, that, and the other, and just a completely different level of energy as opposed to when he's performing a service or providing a service, which he's getting paid for. So he's literally, you know, it's a paid service, which some people feel cynical about, and I feel sort of cynical. There's a cynical thing attached to that in my own value system, but I don't, you know, logically I don't see any reason to be cynical about charging for a service. But anyway,
but that's his living, is it? That job, is it?
That's his living, yeah. But anyway, main point being about energy levels, different varying energy levels. So.
He referred to you actually a few times during the talk, and you were really the only person that he did that with. And I thought that was quite interesting. It's almost as if he wanted you to talk, or wanted to talk to you. But perhaps the context wasn't right or something.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a funny thing there, because I remember saying to Dave at one point early on, I want special treatment from you, Dave. And I remember him saying, okay, logged, whatever. You know, he bookmarked that. Later on, I said, I don't want special treatment. But anyway, I wasn't actually requesting special treatment. I was just saying, this is the kind of person I am, you know, just so you know, the kind of person who likes to get special treatment. I mean, because everybody gets special treatment on the retreats in terms of Dave, because you know, as far as him being aware of everybody's different needs, but I meant it in a specific way. Like, I'm not here in the same capacity that other people are here. That's what I believed back then. And I would say that that's become more and more true with Dave, like going on the retreats. And it's an interesting and quite scary dynamic, and maybe this brings it back to what we're talking about more generally about these meetings, that, I mean, and of course I don't know what the retreats are like that I don't attend. And that's a very weird experience as I have on the Dave retreats, is that afterwards I can't imagine not having attended that retreat. Because it just seemed so tailor-made for me. Like, how could I not have been at it? And I have to remind myself, well, if I hadn't been there, it would have been a completely different retreat. But that's kind of the point, that well, one of the things he said at one of the first retreats I was on, and again I couldn't help wondering, is that because I'm here, is he just starting to say this now, I don't know, but was that he wanted the retreat, the group, to become less and less about him and more about everybody else. And a sense I've had on every day retreat and more is that he, and on the last retreat, he was even like not teaching and not directing and not structuring, to the point that I felt, as I'd felt on previous retreats only more so, that I wanted to actually start leading the retreat to some extent, or not leading it, but motivating it, or, you know, whatever the correct word would be, just so that things would happen. And I think that I know that that's a conscious strategy on Dave's part, because he doesn't want to be the leader, he doesn't want to be the teacher, because he recognizes that that is a trap in and of itself, because people want to be led. They don't want to be autonomous, not really. I mean, they might say they do, but it's very, very frightening. And where was I going with that? Uh, I mean, he would do on the retreats that I've been on, and it's become less and less because I think people have gone through the fire of this experience now, but he would get people, all of us, to do really difficult things, like things that we felt really socially inhibited about doing. So getting up and singing and dancing and whatever it was. I mean, that's just an easy, obvious example, but all kinds of variations on that, where you would be invited or encouraged, not commanded. Anyone could say no if they didn't want to do it, but to perform in certain ways in front of the group. So, for example, now everyone's going to be a guru now, and so then you'd get up and sit in his chair and you'd be the spiritual teacher. That's a very obvious example. But all kind, he would just invent them on the spur of the moment according to what was going on in the room at that particular time, and just come up with the next exercise for the socially inhibited. And this is for,
I don't think he cares, does he? My impression is that it doesn't matter. He doesn't. He's just making it up.
Mm.
And almost like it's a sport in a way, isn't it? That it's just a sort of. It doesn't matter. You're there to find point. He's there to find points of resistance, isn't he? I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what stopped you from actually taking the lead? Then you felt you shouldn't do it because it would be wrong, or that other people would condemn you for it, or he would think it was rude, or.
It wasn't about stepping up and being the leader. It was about taking the initiative, so that and what I became more aware of in myself, that is as frightening as it is to do something that I'm inhibited about when somebody asks, it's much more frightening to volunteer to do it.
Mm.
Because then I'm really putting my neck on the line, right? If Dave says to me, okay, go stand up and do a rap routine, which he did, because he made us do a list of the 10 things we would least like to do in front of the group. I made my list. The first top of it was a rap battle with Dave O'Shana, you know, and so on. He looked at my list and he said, you've just written all the things you want to do. I said, no, I haven't. But, you know, I could see what he meant, because I want to confront my fears. And anyway, the point was that to be seen as wanting to do these things and then do them is much more frightening than doing them because the leader tells you to do them. Because then you can just say, well, I don't really want to do this, or wrong, but I'm going to do it, you know, and it's much less exposing. Whereas to say, I'm going to, you know, show off my rap technique in front of you guys now, obviously that's much more exposing. So there's that. That to me was one of the prime experiences that I've had on the retreats, and also on these calls, as you pointed out, was much more subtle. This feeling of like, well, Dave is, he's leaving a space for anyone, but for anyone, I always hear me, to step up and be, you know, not be what he is, but to be as uninhibited and as spontaneous and as direct, and even, you use the word aggressive, I think he may be an Aries actually, you know, just, and not, it doesn't matter, right? Just kind of break that whole bubble of, which is particularly strong if you're in a so-called spiritual group where you've got the spiritual teachers, as this, even as down to earth as he is and the group is, there's still a certain reverence. Dave's speaking, he's on a different level. You know, we don't want to mess with that, which is, you know, practically that's kind of true. You don't want to, you know, throw a turd in the punch bowl of the transmission just because you want to assert your own presence, obviously. But that's such a fear of spiritual seekers anyway, like that their ego will get seen, that you kind of have to do it just to get through the resistance.
But do you think perhaps he's offering a kind of process of selection for disciples in a way? There is something sort of, some kind of natural selection or something in there, isn't there? The kind of, just to create a very select group. And I wonder if that's what he means, where he's talking about only having one person. But it's not a kind of passive process.
Mm. Well, it's absolutely that, yeah. It's absolutely not passive. It's like, He, insofar as he's embodying this enlightenment transmission thing, he's transmitting something, and it's possible to sit around and receive what he's transmitting, which is what spiritual teachers do. That's the form, right? And that's what I've just written about with Dark Oasis. It's the way of creating this psychic dependency and enslavement, potentially. But if it's really working, and what you're suggesting about how Dave does it is that at a certain point, if you're receiving this, you've got to start transmitting it. Like,
yeah,
that's the only way to really receive is to transmit. Because if you're getting it from him, I mean, I think that's kind of illusory anyway, but if you have the experience of getting something from him and you're just topping up and topping up, well, I don't know how to finish that sentence. I mean, it just isn't, it's not real. If it's not coming from within you, somehow it's not actually real. It's like you're, it's like training wheels on a bike or a simulation or something like that, where you're getting a sense of what it is so you can identify it within yourself as a resource. But at a certain point, it dries up, the external thing. Or you become a junkie, you know. You just need more and more and bigger fixes. And I think Dave does, I think he is very effective at not allowing that to happen. Like those who just want to suck on the tit of the transmission forever, they get pushed out.
Yeah, and he specifically mentioned that about tourists. And that was where he was most aggressive. And that was the point at which I thought, I wondered if he was talking to me, actually, because I laughed. And I wondered, oh, does he think, is he concerned that that's why I'm here? And I respected that he pushed out in that way and showed his aggression. Because I thought, well, that's authentic. It's not he's not trying to suck money out of me. He's saying, you have to qualify, you have to really want to be sincere. I'm not here to put you in a state of mind where you're dependent. And I noticed you laughed actually when I said that. I wondered actually what about it, what I said that was funny.
When you said aggressive.
Aggressive, yeah.
Yeah, well, you said it also right after how you liked the negative, and I knew that Dave would laugh at that because he'd said that, like, some people want the negative and that's me he's talking about, and you had come through me, so it was all, like, really pretty clear.
Yeah, okay. Crushed into the bottom of my ocean like a slipper shell.
All right, that's the end of this week's podcast. My book Dark Oasis, A Self-Made Messiah Unveiled, is now available at all the different Amazon sites. Encourage you to check it out. Likewise, Seen and Not Seen, Confessions of a Movie Autist. If you'd like to donate, contribute, you can buy one of both or all of those books. I'm going to try and have more conversations with researchers, and I'm concerned that the podcast will become a little bit too hermetic, as happened with Warts and Storms. I mean, Warty Theorems and Warts and Storms. And pretty much ended my podcasting as that trajectory continued. So I'm aware of that. I don't want to repeat that and get more and more intimate conversations that, although they definitely offer something different, I don't think that they're sufficient as a total substitute for the kind of explorative dialogues with other people out there that I have no contact with. So I encourage people to suggest other writers, artists, musicians, researchers, what have you, that you think would make interesting podcast conversation partners. Thanks, this is Jason Halsey, once again at The Liminalist, the podcast between... Wallet full of fat, belly full of milk. You're touchingly, deeply fulfilled. You're very old, you're very new. You're touchingly, deeply confused. Can't you see it's a white out, not a brown? And can't you see the white out, it's why I'd be small. It's why I can't go home. Can't you see the white out? Can't you see the white out?
I guess you don't.